Kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Read. I'm Pip Adam. Today we're looking at a project that is not only close to my heart but also close to my house. We're looking at Pukeahu, an exploratory anthology. This is a place-based anthology of waiata, poems, essays and fiction about Pukeahu, Mount Cook, which is a small hill in Wellington, Aotearoa, that rises between two streams. You can read the anthology at Pukeahu anthology.org, and Pukeahu is spelled P-U-K-E-A-H-U. Yes, this project is a wonderful exploration of place, and it brings together a lot of distinct voices and, which that's the sort of project I always like, one that brings together voices and talks about how we organise these distinct voices and present them. There's poetry readings tonight. Chris Teese, Vivian Plum, Bill Manheim and Lynn Davidson will read their poems. But the podcast begins with the welcome that we received from Nevin Broughton.
Tātou kua tatū mai nei i raro i te maru o tēnei maunga me ki ko tōni ngā ko Pukeahu. Pukeahu ka āpiti atu ki ērā o nā maunga tapu nā Puke tapu o tēnei takiwa arā ko Pukeahu, ko Pukeareki, arā ko Pukeatua hoki tērā. Ērā maunga e toru nei, e tūtū nei, hei aha, hei maunga whakahē, hei karapuchi nei i te ākotanga o te whanganui ātara nei. Tēnei au e tuake nei, hei reo, hei māngai mo taranaki whānui, me te mihi kawatu ki koutou, nau mai, hara mai, rarau mai nei. Rarau mai nei ki tēnei o nā maunga ā ko Pukeahu. Rarau mai nei ki tēnei o nā kaupapa ā ko te whakapuaki i nā kōrero e pāna ki a Pukeahu. Rarau mai nei ki tēnei kaupapa e hui hui ai i te tangata nei. Tēnei au he mokapuno o taranaki whānui e mihi kawatu nei ki koutou anō, nau mai, hara mai, rarau mai. Koina ko tāku i tēnei wā te mihi kawatu ki koutou, kia nau mai ki tēnei wā, kia hara mai ki tēnei kaupapa, kia hui mai anō mo tēnei e whakapuaki. And with that, welcome. Welcome everyone. I'm fortunate enough, it's really interesting when you get the opportunity to read a card a little bit about a place of significance that you've kind of grown up with and that you've always known about. And when I read this particular card, and I know the person who wrote it, Pukeahu being a sacred mound or tuahu, a sacred mound or a sacred place. I spoke about in my little mihi there, the sacredness of this mountain connects to two other sacred mountains or two other sacred places here in Wellington. So we have Pukeahu, the sacred mound over here. Connected to this place is Pukeareki. Pukeareki is over in the what we now know as the suburb called Korokoro, and it's the second sacred mountain that makes up three sacred mountains here in Wellington. The third is Pukeatua. Pukeatua is now known as Wainui Hill, and that is the third sacred mountain of the three puke that are down here in Wellington. All connected by the people of Ngaitara because of their sacredness and because of their significance down here in Wellington. Connected by, for Pukeahu, by the two rivers, that being Waitangi and Waimapehi in and around here. Pukeahu is well known for its connection to the cultivations that would feed and sustain the people primarily of Te Arupa. Those of you who are familiar with Te Arupa down by the waterfront, Te Arupa also rolls back into this place over here. And in the autumn, people would move to Pukeahu to come and partake in the fruits and the labours of people in and around autumn. Then moving over to Newtown in the winter, and finally ending up in the spring in Lyle Bay and Island Bay. So Pukeahu is a very sacred place. It's a very significant place. And whilst it's not the biggest mound, it is very definitely a sacred mound. It is connected to us, for those of us that are connected with the Wellington Tents. and the people of Taranaki Whānui. It's a very significant place to ourselves as well. Primarily, there are two really good reasons as to why that is. One is that we have a, I believe it's a statue just out front that relates to the people that were imprisoned underneath the old Dominion Museum in the 1860s here in Wellington. Many of those people were shipped down from Taranaki and were held here before they were moved down to Dunedin. So we have a definite link between those people that were here at that time. Secondly, is in the newly erected sculpture of Hinerangi. And those that of you that have seen that rather, one might say, ghostly figure of a bronzed cloak that has no face. That bronze cloak is the sculpture that we call Hinerangi. And Hinerangi was very special in that she is like the, one would say, the patron saint of the children that were left orphaned after war in general, and specifically the World War I and World War II, which is why Hinerangi is down there. My last point is to bring me to this particular building, Te Pai Hihiri, and the work that we did with Matua Ross on coming up with that name, the spark of innovation, the spark of imagination, the spark of thought. And I'm really looking forward to tonight hearing about the innovation, the thought, the words that have come forth in relation to pukiaku. Nō reira ko te kōrero o pukiaku nei, he kōrero o uara. And so pukiaku itself is a very ancient name provided to us by the people of Ngaitara, who were here well before my people of Taranaki whānau. Bringing it into the contemporary sense, now we have Massey University. And the layers between the people of Ngaitara and Massey University, and all the kōrero and all the stories that come with that as well. So I'm interested to hear some of those layers, obviously, that will come out over the evening, and to look, hopefully, at the aspirations for what might be possible in the future when we have buildings like Te Pai Hihiri nei, when we have kaupapa like Massey University, e ko kiriana, that are moving forward with the ideas and the sparks of our people. Nō reira ko tāku nei, and my role in the absence of our elders, unfortunately, they're pretty busy, and they're pretty old, obviously. In the absence of them today, they've asked me to come here to make sure we go through the appropriate protocols so that you are welcomed appropriately. It's funny, you probably spend a heck of a lot more time here on Pukiahu than I do. However, inside of this sense, I welcome you to Pukiahu, the sacred mountain, as opposed to welcoming you to Massey University or welcoming you to this particular building. There are many reasons why it was considered sacred. And as I said, I'm looking forward to some of the kōrero, whilst it may not be sacred, I'm sure it will be definitely kōrero that will be taken on by yourselves and treasured by yourselves and therefore sacred in that sense going forward. Nō reira, koina ko tāku. Tōku ingoa, ko Nevin Broughton, e te maiti o Taranaki whānui. So my name is Nevin Broughton, and thank you for the invitation to be here and to be part of the opening. Now, we've got between now, about 15-odd minutes, between now and 6:30 before we start, and then I'll be handing it over to Robin, I believe, who'll be picking it up thereafter. Nō reira. Ka tira e tātou nei, i tika na kia tuku au i te hōnore i te karaki i te tuatahi, ā, ka mutu ma te waiata, ma te kai anō hei whakana. So what I'll do is I'll enter into one of our simple karakia that we use, and I'll sing you a song that we use here to talk about the journey of the people of Parihaka, including the people that were imprisoned here for a time. Give you your 10-15 minutes to get to know the people around you, have a bit of a drink, have a bit of a nibble, and Robin will then come in at 6:30. Lōrera, ka tira e tātou nei. Tēnei au e tuku hōnore mo te kaupapa i mui a tātou i tēnei wā, kia hāpai tia, kia kōkiri tia, ā, kia humai, tauihi, tauihi, tauana, kia hāpai, kia whaiangia i te ara tika, te ara poro, te ara aroha. Koe nei te inoi, koe nei te karanga, tūturu whakamangua, kia tina, tēnā hui e tāhiri.
Kia ora, I'm Robin Peace from Massey University. I'm the Regional Director of the College of Humanities and Social Sciences, and I've had the privilege of guiding the Pukeahu Campus Identity Project through.
Can you talk a little bit about the project?
Yes, it started in 2012 as an idea about how the place of the campus felt a little bit lost.
Mm.
And I wondered, and then a group of us wondered, what we might do that would build a sense of identity on the campus. And I had some very early conversations with Te Tū Matakuru O'Connell, who was then working here, and the ideas that were in my head resonated very strongly with ideas in his head. And we talked about putting in a bid for some funding to actually get a project off the ground.
Mm.
And we did, and we were successful. And the project has evolved from that.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit, perhaps, about how the anthology fits with the broader project?
One of the goals of the project was to invite staff and students across the campus to do part of their daily academic work in a way that reflected some of the ideas that were emerging from the wider project.
Mm.
And Ingrid Horrocks was one of the staff who just went, we could do something with this.
Mm.
And so Ingrid did quite a lot of her own work developing an idea about how the creative writing could be linked to the Pukeahu project and to the resources that we were developing in an independent website.
Mm.
Around the project. And then a little bit later, in 2014, Ingrid and I had a conversation about whether we could set up some summer scholarships for a group of students to actually prepare an anthology of material, both their own and material that had been written about the site, so that we could have an artifact
mm.
that represented that kind of creative energy mm. around what this place embodies, means, resonates with.
Mm.
And that's the anthology.
I'm going to invite you now, in this next moment, to mentally close your eyes. I know it's a little bit awkward, you don't have to close them really. But I want you to imagine, just for a moment, that you are not standing here in the foyer of a 21st century building at Massey University, but somewhere else. Close your eyes. You're standing now in the dignity of tremendous trees. Behind your back is a rimu towering so high and wide you are dwarfed by it. Before you, a tawa shifts and heaves with a frenzy of kereru feeding on purple berries. You do not see the sky, and the scent in your nostrils is nahiri, the dense earths of Papatūānuku, millions of years made of this place. And when you now open your eyes, you recognize you are standing in the same place, but one that is different, one that bears its history as an echo in your mind's eye. People and place. Place and belonging. Belonging and identity. Who am I depends on these, on people, place, belonging and identity. I am the coming together in this moment of my future, past and present, each imbricated in the other, layered, voiced and born through crucibles of places. This project, the Pukeahu Anthology, is an expression of a braided journey through place and belonging. As part of a wider project, it began with a disoriented moment in 2012, when I crossed that desolate tarmac out there, one dry, windy Wellington afternoon, walking from one place on the campus to another. My dry and windy thoughts on that day were, what is this place? What is the being of it? What is the story of it? And what am I doing here? The Pukeahu Campus Identity Project was born in that moment, and conversations, many, many conversations over the last 3 years, have given voice to the idea that a campus is not just a set of buildings on a tarmac, but rather is a place of belonging, where identity gathers, thickens, is challenged and remade. Who am I when I am in this place depends on the layered stories carried and voiced by geographies, by trees, by ancestors, by whakapapa, by histories, recollections, conversations, by trace, scent, touch, and by the works represented here. Tonight you are invited not just to close your eyes, but to open them wide to the creative energies that Ingrid Horrocks, Lynn Davidson, Lena Franchin, Rosie Percival, and Thomas Aitken have used to render this anthology, a beautiful artifact that truly begins a journey of bringing honour to this place from within the university. I cannot, we cannot, thank them enough for this collaborative, ingenious and deeply thoughtful work. There is a wider host of people I would like to thank for making this anthology possible. The anthology exists because the Pukeahu Campus Identity Project found its place and its people. People who were prepared to be in this place and to belong with it. Witi Ihimaera's book, Parihaka Woman, woke up my sense of the past of Pukeahu. Tutu Matakuru O'Connell sheltered the first idea for the project and handed me the cultural report written by Maori Love. The support from Maori staff on the campus motivated the application to the university for funding to bring the project into being. I acknowledge this funding is central to the vision and realisation of the wider project and the anthology. The seed grant allowed us to bring other people together, not just the scholarships for the anthology project, but also a Kaitiaki Rupu, a steering group led by Fiona Shearer from English and Media Studies, and made up of academic and professional staff from across the campus, supported by Jane Richardson and Stephen Fitzherbert from the Manawatū Living Labs project. Fiona's work has been pivotal to the ongoing life of the wider Pukeahu project, as she is the person who's led many of the conversations within the university and beyond. And she can't be here tonight because she's driving back after teaching in Palmerston North. The connections Fiona has made provides the portfolio of many others we need to thank. The Tenth Trust, Te Ate Awa, and Taranaki Whānui's ongoing commitment to this tenth, on which Pukeahu stands, underwrites the project. Mary O'Keefe, the archaeologist, came and dug up stories for a detailed archaeological report that, along with those provided by Maori Te Whiti Love, have provided resources for staff and students wanting to build the sense of identity on the campus. Angela Kilford shared her walking performance, and Heather Galbraith commissioned a sculpture from Felipe Togo that reflects the aspiration of a campus with a story to which we are bound. The Ministry of Culture and Heritage, the local high schools, and the builders of the new park have all contributed in different ways, and on and on. We do not thank people enough for in life, for their conversations and their time, and I cannot thank all of these people enough. What I do know is that my sense of place, my belonging, has been immeasurably changed and enriched through this project, and I hope some of the joy and delight of this place, as well as a sense of its deepest sorrows, will bear us all. And finally, my thanks to Ingrid. Ingrid Horrocks truly understood the ambition of the project, and it was Ingrid's energy that brought together Lynn, Lana, Thomas, Josie to realise the emotional and scholarly place for the work that we launch tonight. So thank you.
I'm Ingrid Horrocks and I teach creative writing at Massey University. And I think of myself as a long-term Wellingtonian, but actually that's not really true. I came here when I was 19 from Masterton to do a degree and then went overseas and then came back home. So the last 8 years or so, I've been getting to know Wellington again. and teaching at Massey on this campus, parts of this campus are not beautiful, let me put it that way. And so the introduction of this project from Robin Peace, which asked us to reimagine this location and look at the history and the layers and the stories, was really, it's been really exciting to me, and it's changed actually how I relate to this campus. And the anthology, that partly came from me being involved in this wider project with geographers and people from defence studies, people from all sorts of different areas and history, and my expertise are in creative writing and literature, and that's how I understand the world and that's how I understand place. So my way of encountering the place was wanting to hear the narratives and the stories, and I started working with my students around this, getting them to write and read around the place, and then we got excited and so we started doing the anthology.
It's amazing. I was just thinking, like, reading it over the last couple of days, it was really odd walking up here because I was thinking you just reimagine it in a totally different way, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember Robin coming into the staff room at one point and saying something about the hill, Pukeahu, this hill we're on, and I thought, what hill? Are we on a hill? And then I thought, oh, actually, when I bike, it's kind of, yeah, it's a hill. Okay. But it changes it completely. And that idea of the it having had 25 metres cut off the top of it as well, this idea that there was quite a high hill here. The image I keep coming back to is the idea that we're actually sort of inside what was once the body of the earth.
I love that. I love that in your introduction. And I was just going to say, can you talk just a little bit, I mean it's a huge subject, but can you talk just a little bit about how place fits into, say, personal essay or something like that? Like, how do you think place fits with particularly creative nonfiction?
It's a really, really good question, and one I find quite hard to think about, but as you know, I have been thinking about it quite a lot. One of the things about nonfiction and the personal essay in particular is that it tends to be so in place. So it tends to be written from a particular location. I feel like you always know where someone is, or more often than not, you know where someone is situated, where they're sitting, what their location is. So it's a form that kind of naturally lends itself to writing in a kind of layered and, I guess, personally engaged way about place, which is quite different from, say, historical writing, where you tend to have a more distanced narrator. But in the personal essay, it is a kind of personal engagement with place, which can include history. And I do think quite a few of our, you know, really interesting nonfiction writers in New Zealand are obsessed with place, like Jeff Park. Obviously, place is partly his thing. Steve Brunius. Obviously, one of the things he's trying to do is think about how you write about places.
Lena was talking a little bit about the Catherine Mansfield story being a bit of a, whoa, you know, surprise. Can you think about any of the things that are in here that are surprising or unusual, or they sort of stick out in your brain?
One of my favourite pieces is the Robin Hyde. And it begins something like, John swearing started in Melrose. And it's just this lovely image of this man trying to work from Melrose and riding his bike to town every day. And it's a steep hill, and then they move down into the city. And for me, that kind of just the description of all the different neighbourhoods and thinking, gosh, they're quite similar because of the geography, but gosh, they're so different. But also, one of the things that struck me was all the pieces together. So that Robin Hyde piece talks about Haining Street and the Chinese community, and we've really deliberately put it alongside Alison Wong's piece, which talks about Haining Street in the same period that Hyde's talking about. So they just feel different once they're alongside each other. Chris Kess, whose work is actually not in the anthology, partly because it came out when we were already done. And we kind of could have maybe found a way to include it, but it was complicated. But one of the things that has come through in this writing really strongly is the presence of the Chinese New Zealand community in this neighbourhood. And it's really interesting seeing the different pieces pushing up against each other. So there's a Robin Hyde alongside the Alison Wong, which you might be more familiar with. So we wanted Chris to come and read a poem of one of the
more forgotten songs, I'd say, of this place, one of the very many forgotten songs. Chris will be followed by Vivian Plum, who I think a lot of people will associate with Mount Cook from a long time ago, but she's back in town, which is wonderful. Bill Manhire, obviously a long association with Wellington and with Victoria University, so we're very pleased that Bill was happy to come and read and to contribute a poem to the collection. And then we'll conclude with Lynn Davidson, who's almost Dr. Lynn Davidson. She did this project while she was finishing her PhD.
Good evening. I'm going to read a poem from my book, How to Be Dead in the Year of Snakes, which revisits the murder of Jo Kim Yong by Lionel Terry in Hayman Street, which is just a few blocks from here. So this is called Lament for Jo Kim Yong. If sunlight had never touched his face, would he still hold a stoicism of better days in the pull of his longings? He followed tides after listening to those who held the sun in their mouths, words lit upon a curve. So what was spoken, so what was heard, angelic, revelatory, was kindest to those who listened under care of will. By the break upon sand, it was all a lie. If the breath of this land was no match to the life that surged through his lungs back in China, if his world here was seen through a fallacy of glass, vision twisted and marred by stolen light, only then should you offer to trade places. So there goes a life story reduced to one gunshot, and there goes madness in the form of public service, and there wait those graceless thieves of light and sound, slipping to a snake's crawl to rewrite his truths.
I'm Lynn Davidson. My role with the Pukeahu Anthology was as co-editor and supervisor of the three third-year students who were researching the material. Mm-hmm. You asked me about what this area, Mount Cook Pukeahu, means to me. Well, we go back a very long way. When I was a teenager, sort of late teens, early 20s, it used to be pretty exciting to catch the train, the Rattler, from Pukerua Bay to Wellington and go up to the Mount Cook Cafe and be pretend adults. That's like an institution. And so it was, you know, a place where there were sometimes parties and... Yeah, I think a lot of people have those sort of memories of this area. And more recently, it's been the place where I've been coming every day to work on my PhD. So Ingrid, who I've been working with on this anthology, is also my supervisor. So, yes, I've spent a lot of time here. And I've really enjoyed coming to this campus. It's easy to get to. It's just in a beautiful area, and of course doing this anthology has just opened the place up incredibly for me.
Yeah, I found the same experience. You know, the anthology really just gives you a whole different view of the place.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, there's a great, in your excellent preface, there's a little bit about a part of the process of putting together the anthology where you guys laid out all the stories on the floor. And I'm just wondering, I love hearing that idea of how things talk to each other. And I'm just wondering, have you got any thoughts on that?
Oh, that was such a great process. We were lucky because we were allowed to use the marae here on campus to have our meetings in. So myself and Lena and Thomas and Rosie, we were deciding how to, you know, along with Ingrid, how to... put them into categories, put the material that we'd gathered that was so kind of vibrant and interesting individually, how to sort of put it together. And I remembered that when I was writing a novel one time, many years ago, and I was living in a house with a big long hallway, I decided that I needed to actually see what I had written. So I got the different kind of chapters and parts and kind of put them up and down the hallway, and I walked up and down and looked at kind of what was there. And I remember that as being another level of getting to know the material, just kind of looking at it. And so that was in my mind, but also the idea that we could move things around. So we were all in our socks, and we put down our potential sort of category headings. And it was just so interesting, because when you put certain things side by side, I think I said this in the preface, you know, a third entity develops. So it was showing us that arrangement of material is so, well, I guess it's how you, in a way, mediate how the reader experiences the material to some extent, because it's online and people, of course, can choose their own way through it. But it was just interesting to see how some pieces talk to each other, some pieces, like a contemporary essay, say by Rachel Buchanan, might speak back to an essay by Alston Best. And I don't know, I want to use the word repair or speak to or get into important conversation with some of that material. Mm. Yeah.
That's awesome. A couple of the others, Lena and Ingrid, have talked a little bit about anything that was maybe surprising or enchanted you, or something you slightly fell in love with over the process. Is there one piece that you can think about like that?
Gosh, there's lots of enchanting and wonderful pieces. I guess rather than maybe just pick out one piece, I think that what enchanted me the most was what the land, the history of the land, what has been here, and what is past but isn't past. I went to see that film about the two Hoi raids, the Price of Peace. Yeah. Yesterday, and there was this lovely quote in there that says, "The past is in front of us." And I guess that is what I found the most wonderful, the most enchanting, the most sobering, and the most exciting thing about this anthology is I can see how that is true.
Oh, I'd just like to say how nice it is to be here tonight, and what a great idea I think the anthology is. Because I did. I lived in Mount Cook for, I just worked out this afternoon, it was 24 years. I lived here between 1981 and May the 25th, 2005 was the day I left for Arrow Valley. So my son grew up here, he went to Wellington High, and I knew heaps of people who lived around here. In Tainui Terrace, I had friends who lived in a house where there was a secret room for gambling, originally. So, and the year that we moved here in 1981, somebody was murdered in the Tramways Hotel. So it was quite a lively area in those days. This poem's a little bit about that. So it's all about when I left that house. To the woman who bought my house, Virginia, the queen of the real estate agents, introduces us. I smile, but my smile doesn't touch the sides. So then I shake her hand. She asks if the area has changed. Yes. She wouldn't have bought the house then, in the good old days, when drugs were found hidden in the notorious pub down the road, and murderers drank there before they headed straight off to murder. The brothel was on that corner, and punks who chopped up their furniture for firewood lived next door. Virginia says, the first offer can be the best. It's an old real estate saying, apparently, and they have enough of those. So, to that woman who bought my house, I hope you find the secret trapdoor. And there is an old cat buried out in the garden. And it's okay with me if you paint over the pictures my son drew with a lead pencil on his bedroom wall. This was truly a good house, although I warn you, it makes noise, it creaks and yawns. It is like those labels attached to third world rugs. Any flaws are part of the natural fibre. Virginia told me, there is another home for everyone. And while this house does not shelter me anymore, nevertheless, I bless it for you. I bless it for you.
So, I'm Thomas Aitken, and I was helping research and collate different sources for the anthology, which was a scholarship that I got from a paper called Creative Nonfiction that I did with Ingrid Horrocks, who was overseeing the project. And I guess in that paper, we went on a kind of walking tour of the Massey campus, which is something, a place that I've been coming back and forward from for the past 5 or 6 years, because I've been starting and stopping with studying. And I also went to high school down the road at Wellington College, and it's an area that I've spent a lot of time in. And I guess on that walk, it opened my eyes to a lot of the stories that were present in this place that I had kind of glossed over. And, you know, a history to New Zealand which I had never really acknowledged. And I guess that sparked a kind of passion in me. And I think got real enthusiastic about the paper. Ingrid noticed that enthusiasm and offered me, or asked if I wanted to help out with the research project.
Mm-hmm. Everyone I talk to, and Lynn mentions it in her introduction, talks about you as the walker, you know, like, yeah. And I just wonder, can you talk a little bit about walking around this area and what that means? And yeah,
It started because I like walking to school. I live up in Karori, and it's like a nice time to do my readings and then have like an hour while I'm thinking about my readings and like preparing myself for the school day. And I kind of noticed that there's a lot of things that go unnoticed when you're commuting in a car or a bus that you know that I've noticed when I was walking. Things like interesting interactions with people, and I guess when we started researching the project, I just took to walking around because it's built on the town belt, well, with the town belt in the back, so there's like awesome views of Wellington. And yeah, I suppose that like led me to exploring a lot of corners that didn't so much crop up in stories but are really relevant in Pukeahu at the moment. So say walking past the George Porter flats on Hopper Street, and there was a fire there like at the start of the year, and a whole like section of the floor was like all burnt and mangled and was just left there for months. And like it's kind of like a back alleyway that I've heard some people refer to as rape alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And just like walking around there being like, oh, like, these are all like little hidden corners of Wellington that aren't really acknowledged by a lot of people, but on the other hand, like lived-in hubs for a majority of people.
Because mm-hmm. I was just thinking, like your piece of work that appears in the anthology, it sort of takes place in one of those little corners at sort of 3 a.m. On Anzac Day, and I really like the way there's sort of this official of Anzac, and then you've kind of captured what happens at those boundaries of Anzac Day.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where you like to situate your writing, like this sort of looking perhaps just off screen slightly?
That whole piece was like really last minute. I like initially had written this piece that had all this bravado and history of like immigrations coming from Kupe, starting at a statue down on the waterfront and walking up Taranaki Street and talking about the kind of progression of like buildings and history walking up Taranaki Street. And then I think it just all got a bit too much, and it was me trying to like weave in everything I had researched in the anthology into a piece. And then I was like, wait a minute, everything I've researched in the anthology is already in the anthology, so I have to come up with something that's uniquely me. Wow, these guys know it all, so the only thing uniquely me is probably Courtney placed at 3 a.m. on Anzac morning.
Yeah, it's a great piece.
Oh, thanks.
So how did you enjoy the process?
Yeah, it was a cool insight into world of creative writing academics, I guess, and like studying for me has been a way of finding like what I'm passionate about, and so getting into this research project was a good way of exploring ways to continue writing and like having a bit of maybe not financial security, but yeah, it was interesting. I don't know if I'm cut out for academia though.
To be continued.
Kia ora tātou. It's very nice to be here. Wrong bit of paper. And really nice to have a small part in this anthology, which I think is great. You know, big congratulations to everyone involved with it. My little poem has to do with the Carillion, I guess. Pronounced Carillion. It's sort of interesting to me now in this context, because someone, I suppose the relevant ministry, took the name Pukeahu for the National Memorial, War Memorial Park. I don't know what that process was, but that's what it's going to come to mean, I guess, nationally over the years, rather than all the stuff that's in this anthology. And this little poem, I suppose you could think of as a poem spoken by someone whose imagination has become overexcited by a Second World War film and is slowly sort of coming down from that cheap excitement. So it's called After the Movie. A cry comes again from the pavilion. I was that nurse and that civilian. I was the song in the carillion. She sat on a tree trunk, no, a boulder. I was the heart inside the soldier, that broken arm, that hand, that shoulder. Night, which is moonless, melancholy. I was the man who was extraordinary. But who really knows the real Billy Connolly?
My name is Rosie Percival, and I'm the designer on the project. And Mount Cook, or Pukeahu, I mean, I live in Nian Street, which has a lot of history in itself. And having lived there for roughly a year to 14 months or so before I started on the project, I actually hardly knew anything about the area that I lived in. So it was really interesting, really fascinating, learning a lot about, yeah, where I live, and lots of people I don't think know that, especially if you don't grow up in that area.
We've got some skateboards going past, that's pretty cool. Nice flat area. Can you tell me a little bit about what's particular about designing a literary anthology like this for an online environment?
So I guess the nature of a lot of writing is that the medium is always tended to be print, so books or posters and that sort of thing. But yeah, really with the growth of web and online and that sort of thing, that was a whole sort of another factor to consider with legibility and readability and really giving, really showcasing those texts without making it this sort of really fancy web design project or graphic design project.
Because it's beautiful, like I really like the way there's quite a bit of white space in there, and it's very readable. What things does a website have to be readable like that?
Really, from a design point of view or typographic point of view, font size, the space between the negative space, like you said, the white space, And also that sort of user experience, how do you get from one place to another? I think that's really important. And so at the very beginning stages of the design, given that there was one designer on a ME supervised by Anna Brown from OpenLab, and there wasn't a web developer, so we were trying to save costs or cut corners, I suppose, by trying to find a template that fitted within our project or the sort of themes that we thought were important. So there was a little bit of trial and error trying to find a pre-made template which would save us time, but in the end we couldn't find anything that sort of really matched what we wanted. So we're like, okay, we'll just start from the beginning and design for the project and about the project, and we got a web developer on board who I work with, so that was a lifesaver.
I can imagine. I'm really interested, I don't know if you've got thoughts on this, but I'm really interested about how this is so heavily based in place, yet, you know, I can access it anywhere. You know what I mean? It sort of exists in this virtual space. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, well, that's the real beauty of the online anthology, is that anyone can access it, even if you don't live in Pukeahu, you know, and international. So we've got Google Analytics, which is just a tool that you can see who accesses the site from where and their sort of behaviour, what kind of things they do. And it's really interesting to see that it is quite international. We're getting lots of readers from all around the world, which is awesome. And one of the sort of design elements, given that there's not that much, I guess, when you look at it, there's not much graphic design. It's just really sort of typographic. One of the things that we really looked at was, you know, maps and cartography and that sort of visual language. And so a lot of those colours are sort of drawn from maps, sort of legends and those sort of colour schemes. And even if it's not that obvious, that sort of layering and so is there.
Why so hard to follow Bill Mann? I went to a movie yesterday called The Price of Peace about the raids on Tuhoi, and I heard this sort of, I guess you might call it the proverb that goes, the past is always in front of you. And I think working on this anthology and learning what I've learned so far about this place, Māori history, the Chinese history, many histories, I cannot pretend that the past is not in front of me anymore. It is there, and it should be guiding us. My poem is called Drift. Stephen Burt says snow makes American poetry American. And so I wonder if the sea, let's just say water, makes New Zealand poetry New Zealand. Take the stream that runs under the Carillion. It goes on ringing, drops flicking against stone and singing. At night, when in the tower, the stilled bells become women in great brass dresses ascending. We could hear the stream as a four or five note memory of sky and loss and journeying, an Aotearoa sound that drifts up from underneath rather than from a ringing cold sky descending.
Hi, I'm Lena Francham. I've been a student at the Wellington campus of Massey for the last year. I moved down here from Whangarei a year ago, and yeah.
Cool. And you've been one of the editors of the anthology, eh?
Yeah.
And how's that been?
Yeah, real journey. Really amazing. It was just like the best way to get used to, or to get to know Wellington, or at least this part of Wellington. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I feel like I know Mount Cook Pukeahu about, yeah, better than anywhere else in Wellington. Just from having, yeah, gone in and around it and explored, like, on a literary level as well as a physical level, which is what we did through the whole time of researching, really, with Thomas's help, because he is the walker. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how you uncovered works for the anthology?
Following hunches a lot. You know, we had a few leads when we started, and then it was National Library and Googling and hunting down stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to think. Yeah, a lot of just Googling, and like, you know, just all sorts of permutations like relating to the area.
Mm-hmm.
Following up on a lead and going through National Library, went down to City Library and talked to Fire Anne Rewati down there, and she was really helpful, just kind of providing me with all these links to references in Whakapapa and Waitangi Tribunal stuff. Yeah. Yeah, heaps and heaps of digging and not finding a lot, but every now and then just hitting on something and it'd be like this little magic treasure popping up. Yeah. Catherine Mansfield's story was, I just kept, it was really following hunches, and this story, Old Underwood, I don't know how, it was. Just, I just kept following because I felt like it was going to lead somewhere, and that came up.
That's awesome.
I should have actually diaried that, like how that, how those sorts of things happen, just mm-hmm. for future reference. But it's almost like, I don't know, I found it really intuitive.
Mm.
So it's probably a lot to do with, you know, the things that I like. And yeah. Stories that just caught my imagination. Got a real sense of just layers of kind of being able to experience a place in layers, which I never really consciously done that before. But I mean, we do all the time, don't we?
Mm, mm.
But yeah, it was like, and also just feeling like listening or feeling, trying to sense the place. You know, I'm just like feeling around with the way I kind of, the whole time I was just trying to kind of think of this place, Pukeahu, as in different ways, looking at it from different facets, and looking under things for the unexpected. And almost like blindfolding yourself so that you can hear better or sense things in a different way. Do you understand what I mean? I don't know
totally.
If that just sounds...
I totally understand what you mean.
Yeah.
That's awesome.